Okay, morning. Today's daf is daf lamed tes. We find ourselves on lamed ches amud beis, and we go back. Let's just go back to the Mishnah. Let's just review the Mishnah. Let's review the Braisa, and then we'll pick it up right where we left off yesterday. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is lamed tes. Mishnah Liba Gavrila Bashmuel. The Mishnah teaches us that an ara who undergoes erusin and then has a gerushin. So it is a machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Kiva, where exactly the kenas is directed. So again, let's just go over what we know from the Torah. The Torah tells us that when a man is ma'an, it's a woman. So aside from paying all the normal payments, the regular compensatory payments that he normally has to pay, boshus, pagam, tsar, ripui, sheves, all the normal payments he has to make, he has to also pay kenas. Kenas, the fine that he pays is going to be over and above that which he, over the damage that he did. It is chamishim kesef, it's 50 shkalim. And when is she entitled to this kenas? So it's very limited. She's only during the period of Nara, although as we learned, also Katana as well. So up until she's 12 and a half years of age. And also Asher lo arasa. The Torah says that she wasn't betrothed, meaning she didn't even go through the first stage of marriage. The simple pshat in the psukim is that this kenas that she's entitled to is only going to be when she's in a certain age frame, and also when she's of a certain marital status, meaning no marriage. No marriage meaning not second stage of marriage, not the first stage of marriage as well. Then and only then she's going to receive kenas. I keep saying she's entitled to the kenas. Everyone understand? Yeah. And I'm going to be clear about this, and it's going to be obviously a big point throughout our discussion. The father gets the kenas. He's the one who actually receives the kenas. But he gets it through her, meaning really the payment goes to her, but because she's still a nara, and because the father has the rights of his daughter up until she becomes a bogeris. When she becomes a bogeris, she leaves the reshus of her father. So the payment goes to her, but then it goes to her and then goes up to the father. So the father ultimately is the collector of the kenas, but really it's her that's creating that entitlement of kenas. Okay. And you'll see why that's an important point later on. What if she undergoes erusin? So that's a machlokis in the Mishnah. Rabbi Kiva says, Yesh la kenas v'kenas latzma. So Rabbi Kiva says, she gets the kenas. Meaning that what Erisin does is, it doesn't remove the kenas is still there, but there's going to be a shift, there's going to be a change. As opposed to previously, before the Erisin, it was the father that was going to get the kenas, but now she's going to get the kenas. That's Rabbi Kiva of the Mishnah. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili in the Mishnah says, no, there's no longer a kenas. Meaning Rabbi Yossi Aglili, kipshuto hamikra, going with the simple pshat the Torah, says, that's it, done. Meaning, obviously, they'll still pay the rest of the compensatory payments, but in terms of kenas, it's no longer a kenas. Okay. Then we saw there was a Rabbi Akiva de Braisa, meaning there was a second version of what Rabbi Akiva said. What did Rabbi Akiva say in the Braisa? Rabbi Akiva in the Braisa says, Yesh la kenas v'kenas la'avia. Rabbi Akiva the Braisa says, there's simply no change. Meaning that the father still gets the kenas even after erusin. Nisuin, if she goes to the second stage of marriage, then she leaves the domain of her father. But erusin, she doesn't leave the domain of the father. It's a little bit odd, as the Gemara is about to point out. I think this is exactly where we left ourselves off yesterday. It's a little bit odd that what Rabbi Kiva the Brice is doing is totally extracting the simple pshat of the psukim. Meaning the Torah says that in order for her to receive this entitlement of a kenas, it is a woman asher lo arasa, a woman who wasn't betrothed. And what Rabbi Kiva the Brice is saying is, and if she was betrothed, so then the father's still going to get it. So then it's a little bit strange. But as the Gemara pointed out yesterday, what does Rabbi Kiva do with the words asher lo arasa? He uses it for gzeira shava. So in other words, that pasuk is spoken for, so to say, or that phrase in the pasuk is spoken for, so therefore he doesn't need it for the drasha. This is all what we covered yesterday. Let's pick it up from exactly where we left off yesterday, which is Trei Tanai Aliba the Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara points out, obviously the Mishnah and the Braisa are not in agreement with each other, meaning when I say not in agreement, I mean even over what Rabbi Akiva says. The Mishnah says, according to Rabbi Akiva, the Orasa, the woman who's betrothed, money goes to her. According to Rabbi Akiva, the Braisa, Asher lo Arasa, I'm sorry, once she goes to Erisin, money still goes to the father, meaning nothing changes. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. Trei Tanai Aliba de Rabbi Akiva. There's no elegant way to explain it. It's just We have two different versions of what Rabbi Akiva said. Meaning, again, the common denominator, I made this point yesterday, the common denominator is that there's still a kanas. It's just a question of now, where does the kanas get directed? Does it remain in its path to go to the father, or does it get redirected to her? Okay. So the Gemara says, as far as Rabbi Akiva, the Mishnah, it's easier to hear. Meaning, it's a shita which conforms a little bit better to the psukim. Because what does the Torah say? Dad gets the knas when she didn't go through Erisin. Good. According to Rabbi Akiva the Mishnah, and if she did go through Erisin, there's a change. And that is, she's going to get the knas. So at least you still have some semblance of a pshat in the Pesukim. Ela Rabbi Akiva the Braisa, Asik Zeru Shavu Mafkim Mipash Legamrei. But according to Rabbi Akiva the Braisa, what happened? You had a phrase in the Torah which we're just supposed to ignore. The Gemara says that's strange. We're gonna ignore the simple pshat in the Torah. Torah says that dad's gonna get a knas when she, if she's not me'oras, and what are we supposed to do now? Ignore it? So, Amar Rav Nachman by Yitzchak Kari Bei Asher Lo Arusa. So the Gemara says, well, maybe what we could say is that the pasuk is to be read Asher Lo Arusa, that she's not currently in Arusa. So the Gemara says, Arusa Baskili. So the Gemara says, wait a second. If she was currently in Arusa, so there's not going to be a penalty whatsoever. Meaning, now we're talking about Eish Hazish. Now we're talking about Kamle B'Drabimine. So if she was currently engaged, so then there obviously is nothing to talk about. So the Gemara says, well, no, it's still a Chiddush. Chiddush would be as follows. You're right. In terms of the compensatory payments, absolutely right. We have a rule of Kamle B'Drabimine that the capital crime that was committed by having relations with a married woman is going to supersede, it's going to override all the regular payments. You're right. But what about Knas? One could argue Knas is a Chiddush. We've been arguing that now for a couple of days, that Knas is a Chiddush. So I might have thought the Havamina would have been that, you're right, he doesn't have to pay the compensatory damages because he's liable for the death penalty, but he has to pay Knas. Chiddush of the Torah is he doesn't even have to pay Knas as well, meaning it creates exemption even on the Knas. You know where the next question should be? What about the opinion of Rabba? Rabba says, no, I think that Knas is such a Chiddush that Knas is going to get paid even if there is a capital crime that's committed concurrently with the Knas penalty. So according to Rabba, so it's not a Havamina that we dismiss. It's a halacha. The halacha is you not only are subject to the capital punishment, but you also pay Knas as well. So the Gemara says, you're right. Meaning, don't try to match Rabbi Akiva the Braisa together with Rabba. Incompatible. Meaning, because according to Rabba, you do pay Knas and you are subject to Misa Bidei Adam. So there's no compatibility between Rabba and Rabbi Akiva the Braisa, so don't try it. In other words, if you want to stick with the sheet of Rabba, so you're going to put him together with Rabbi Akiva the Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva the Mishnah, good. Works out better. Because now at least you still have some semblance of the simple pshat in the pasuk. Tan Rabbana. Gemara quotes a Braisa, Knas Alami. Who does the Knas go to? Which is a funny question considering the fact that the Torah tells us who the Knas goes to. So the Gemara in a moment is about to clarify. So Lami Ala Aviyah. So according to the Tanakam, the Knas goes to the father. V'yeshur Mem Latzman, some say it goes to her. To which the Gemara says, what are we talking about? Latzma Amai. What do you mean it goes to her? It doesn't go to her. Read the Chumash. Torah says it goes to the father. What are we talking about? To which the Gemara gives just a simple explanation. No, the Braisa is not talking about a straightforward case. Braisa is talking about a case where she underwent Erisin, and then she did and then she was a Grusha, and then she was an Anusa, and now the question is, there's going to be a Kenas. Who's the recipient of the Kenas? Is the Kenas going to go to the father, or is the Kenas going to go to her? And that is exactly the two different versions of the Rabbi Akiva's. Rabbi Akiva the Mishnah, which is it goes to her, or Rabbi Akiva the Braisa, which is it goes to the father.
But there's no contradiction in it if you want to follow that logic. They're different, right?
Mean, Meaning, the two opinions in the Braisa reflect the two opinions of Rabbi Akiva.
They're two different circumstances, then. They're not the same circumstances.
No, in other words, the Braisa wasn't even dealing with the regular case. The regular case, we know where the money goes. This is talking, the Braisa is talking about the unusual scenario. Amar Abaye.
Why not going to their husbands to eat?
No. In other words,
she gets the money, but isn't that like another situation, like the father and the...
We're going to talk later. In fact, today we're going to talk about the ultimate marriage, not the ultimate, but the possible marriage between the Ma'anes and her. Well, we'll talk about that later on.
If the husband decides to continue with her, she's not going to get the grass money.
Well, when you say husband, which...
The husband-to-be.
So we'll talk about that later. Later we're going to talk about the husband-to-be. But right now, we're just talking about who the recipient, who the beneficiary of the kenas is. Amar Abaye. Ba'ala u'mesa potter. Shenemar v'nasin la'aviyah na'aravala la'avimesa. Okay. So Abaye has a drasha. And the drasha is very simple. From Abaye's standpoint, it's very simple. Which is that if a man is ma'anis a woman, and she dies... So he no longer has to pay the kesef kenas. Why? Shenema, because the Torah says, "V'nasan la'avi hana'ara." When you give the kenas, you give it to the father of the woman. So v'lo la'avi mesa. So in other words, the only way that the father is able to be the recipient of the money is only through the daughter. But if there's no daughter, so then the father doesn't receive the money. Okay, that was simple to Abaye. Abaye thought that was a pashat halacha. So milsa de pshita leil Abaye, mi bai leil Rabba. So the Gemara says Abaye had it as simple. It was pashat. Rabba didn't have it so simple. I said Rabba, by the way, and that indicates that it's Rabba with a hay. And then in my mind, I was thinking that can't be. Abaye is going to argue with his Rebbe. So the Gemara, no, it's Rabba. Okay. So milsa de pshita leil Abaye, mi bai leil Rabba. De bai Rabba. Okay. Rava asks the following question. Yesh beggar bekever, o ain beggar bekever. It is the way the question is formulated, it's going to sound strange, but in a moment, hopefully if I do a good job explaining, so it's going to be, it'll hopefully become very clear. Okay, before I explain the question of Rava, let's go over some basics. I mean, we've been doing this for a while now, but just making sure that we're all grounded and on the same page. Again, as a girl is a katana, so not only is she not a gedola, now she's not obligated to mitzvahs, but she's totally under the domain of the father. Father has rights to her, and the father even has rights to go as much as to even marry her off, quote-unquote sell her off, selling off is for the purpose of marriage, meaning father has total domain over the daughter. When she becomes a nara, so what happens? So although, despite the fact that she's now an adult, but she's still under the domain of the father. Father still has rights. What better way to reflect that than what we're discussing right now? Meaning, she was an anusa, she's going to receive a payment. Who's going to receive the payment? The father's going to be receiving the payment. Why? Because, again, it's a, like I described yesterday, it's an income. I know it's a strange source of income. It's a tragic source of income. But it's an income, and an income goes to the father while she's a nara. Your question is going to be answered in just a moment. What removes her from the status of her father? So two things. One, number one, she becomes a bogeris. Once she becomes a bogeris, that's it. Now, in other words, not only is she an adult, but she's an independent adult, meaning that now any earnings that she has goes to her. And her father no longer has any rights to her. And it goes without saying that the father can't marry her off, and the father can't do any, has no proprietary rights over her. Okay, that's obvious, when she becomes a bogeris. But there's another way in which she exits her father, and that's through nisuin. Meaning marriage also is another way of her exiting her father. You'll notice, by the way, that the Gemara didn't mention nisuin and gerushin. For really one of two reasons. Number one, because if she underwent nisuin, she's no longer a basula. Okay? But also number two is that once she goes through nisuin, she no longer is connected to the father. Meaning at that point in time, she's perfectly independent. Okay. So that is a... right? Huh?
What about
the stages? So Erisin, right. So Erisin, no. She does not... She no longer... She doesn't leave the rights of the father. If it was just Erisin, okay, which was clear from the Mishnah that we saw yesterday. Now, with all that stated, so let's now think about what Rav is asking. Rav is asking the following question: Yesh beger bekever or ein beger bekever? Can she become a bogeris even post mortem? Now, obviously, physically speaking, once we're talking about the termination of life, obviously she's not developing anymore, right? In other words, it's a tragedy, and obviously she's not having another birthday. But the question on the table is the following: are we now going to look at her not an actual age, but do we look at the calendar and say, had she be alive right now, she'd be a bogeres? Meaning, let's say she was violated as a nara, she died, and now, for whatever reason, the courts delayed. In other words, the court didn't take care of it until a couple months later. And at this point in time, now she's a bogeres. Now again, she's not a bogeres. Unfortunately, she died. But do we look at her as if she were alive? She would now be a bogeres, and therefore the kenas is going to what? Well, that last part is not perfectly clear, but right now I'll just read it inside in the Gemara, and you'll see in a moment we're going to change it a little bit.
What difference does it make?
You'll see.
That the money is going to go to the pot anyway.
That's exactly it. Well, let's discuss. So, Debai Rava, Yesh Beger Bekever, Ein Beger Bekever. So, does she become a Bogeris in the grave, or does she not become a Bogeris in the grave? And the Gemara goes on to explain what difference does it make. Yesh Beger Bekever, Udebenahave. Do we say that there is Bagris even post mortem? Meaning that even though she no longer is alive, but nevertheless, halachically, her biological, her developmental stages continue going. And she's a bogeris, even underground. And therefore, who's going to be the recipient of the kenas? She'll be the recipient of the kenas. Now, of course, that statement is not possible. Right? But her estate is going to be the recipient of the kenas. What the Gemara now describes as her children now going to be the recipient of the kenas. Right. Good. You're with the program. So Gemara's going to ask. Odilma ain't beggar bekever v'davi ave, or no? In other words, her death is going to keep her in that state in perpetuity, so that now when Beis Din gets together and Beis Din goes ahead and rules, so Beis Din will treat her as a nara forever, which means that the father is going to be the recipient. Now, mind you, by the way, Abaye couldn't agree with any of this, meaning Abaye doesn't even see where the question begins. Because Abaye just said a moment ago that the moment that she's dead, the father no longer is the recipient. So this question that Rav is dealing with, which is a very sophisticated question of whether or not she matriculates, whether she matures, even after she dies, for Abaye the question doesn't even start. It's a non-starter. But that's exactly the point of the Gemara. Meaning what Abaye thought was so obvious and so simple, what Rav says, oh, I don't know. Meaning, I could see the father getting money even though she's no longer alive.
Even if she doesn't have any kids, right? Wouldn't the father be a Yorish?
The father would be the Yorish, but the Gemara, of course,
so
you're right.
Not
but
just that the father is getting it as a
right. The Gemara just wants to express the point in a way in which it's saying is that if there is Bagris even underground, so then she, in other words, it doesn't go to the father, it goes to her. The father may get it by default,
right?
But the point, right? Correct. But the Gemara's point is that fundamentally, really, should go to her. Now, there is a larger question, by the way, which I'll just address quickly right now. But we're gonna move on to the Gemara, and that is we're talking about knas. Knas is different than payment. A payment is an account receivable. Somebody owes me money, that is an account receivable, and that, of course, is transferable to the next generation. A person has an account receivable, and the person dies. Obviously, his children, you know, especially if we're talking about on paper. Right. If we're talking about an obligation on paper, but any outstanding income that goes to the father, the kid's going to be able to inherit that, and the kid's going to be collecting that as well. But we're talking about kenas, and kenas doesn't work that way. If Beis Din did not order the kenas to be paid, the kenas is not there. It's not a transferable asset until Beis Din says, you owe the money. So the question of the Gemara over here, is a, even the question the Gemara is asking is tough to grapple with, because essentially what the Gemara is saying is, hey, this cannot, so that basin hasn't imposed yet. Do our children get it? Meaning, if Basin hasn't imposed it, so that doesn't go to the next of to the next of kin. Tosos, it's a long Tosos, we're not going to go through it. But you just see Tosos articulate the question. Last Tosos on the Amud. Yesh beker v'kever u'debanave v'im tamer. Hachi matzel memer sh'teimer reshes kenas lebana. You don't inherit, you don't bequeath a kenas over to your children. Ha'ein adam morish kenas lebanav k'da amrinan resh perek nara. We're going to see in a short couple of days from now. Doesn't work that way. Kenas is not an inheritable asset. So uvitzamach nami amar yesh beker bekever paka av v'adam marish kenas ki yesh beker bekever nami lo paka av v'yehelo mitaros yerusha. Okay. Anyway, Tosus asked the question. See Tosus for a discussion of this issue. It is a basic issue, but we're gonna go back to the Gemara. We're gonna stay focused with the Gemara.
What about the five category of damages?
That's compensatory.
But are the Yorshim getting that?
Are the Yorshim going to get that? Presumably yes. Meaning that's
they are.
That's right. That's right. That's a transferable asset.
As far as the right of the father to the how could it be that she has children and she's still on the
state? Good. That'll be the Gemara's next question. You're good. So the Gemara, now we're on the top of Lamed Tesamid Aleph. Umi Ma'abra, the Gemara says, now, we're asking a question, and it's a conceptually wonderful question. It really gives us what to think about. But Gemara says, but even to think about it, right? Hedy, exactly your point. Meaning, let's first make sure that all this can happen. What we're asking, she died as a Nara. She now matriculates to a Bogar. She would have matriculated to a Bogar had she been alive. And now the question is the father still receiving the Kenas, or is she receiving the Kenas, meaning her estate receiving the Kenas? To which the Gemara says, Umi Ma'abra, what are we talking about? She doesn't have children. If this sounds familiar, it should, because we did this not that long ago in Yavamos. Three women who should be using contraception, and they are Elohein, Kitanu, Mabertha, Manika, a mind. A woman who is pregnant and a woman who is nursing. The minor should be using contraception, because if she gets pregnant, it's going to be a danger for her. A pregnant woman should also be using contraception when having relations with her husband, because if she doesn't, so then a post-pregnancy pregnancy may be a hazard to the baby, and I understand it's we're not right. I asked around and to see if that if there are such modern day cases of such, and meinika shematikmal esbena. And the Gemara says, and as far as someone's nursing, well, she gets pregnant, so she's going to stop lactating, and that also poses a danger to her baby. So therefore, these three women should be using contraception. So, and when we say ketana, we're going to give a very clear parameter of from 11 to 12. Anything less than that, anything more than that, so then she has relations with her husband with no contraception. Prior to 11 years of age, she's not going to get pregnant. After 12 years of age, if she gets pregnant, great. In other words, obviously every pregnancy has a risk to it, but that's allowable. That's acceptable risk. And the Chachamim disagree fundamentally. They say no, none of these women should be using the form of contraception as far as becoming pregnant. So leave that up to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu will watch over the fools. The pasuk says in Tehillim, Shomer Pesayim Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu watches over fools. And so we can behave in a slightly foolish manner. I know that's subject to a lot of interpretation, but we can behave in a slightly foolish manner, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu watches over us. I mentioned this before. One of the funniest applications of this principle, funny. I mean, we're talking Torah, we're talking halacha, but one of the funniest applications of this principle is I saw an Aruch HaShochan, Rav Yechiel Epstein, about 100 years ago. So a little bit more. So contemporary of the Nitziv. So anyway, so he writes, you know, the Gemara says that when you, after going to the bathroom, so you should be wiping yourself with, the Gemara says, with something which is not flammable. Okay, and back then, in the good old days, they used to wipe themselves with stones. So the Aruch HaShulchan wonders, you know, the Gemara says that we shouldn't be wiping ourselves with something that isn't flammable, and we all do. In other words, we all use some sort of toilet paper. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, the Gemara says we shouldn't do that. So Aruch HaShulchan says, I mean, it's one of those questions which there's no great answer to, but the Aruch HaShulchan says, Shomer Pesayim Hashem, meaning we're acting a little bit foolishly, granted, but the Gemara says, the Aruch HaShulchan says, but we, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu watches over us. He'll, you know. Anyway, the chit, it is entertaining. To which now the Gemara says like this. So let's stay with the Gemara. We have a machlokes between Rav Yossi and the Tanna Kamma. Okay, sorry. We have a machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim in this brisa whether or not a ketana should or should not you be using contraception. But it pretty much sounds like that a ketana is not going to be delivering a baby. V'chitem de abra kishinara. So the Gemara says fine. Either with the help of a contraception or with the help of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's guidance, she's not going to get pregnant while she's a katana. So now what? So now we move to she's going to become pregnant when she's an ara. But that's not going to help. Meaning we're trying to get her a state before she dies. It's not going to work. The Gemara says, so maybe she got pregnant when she was an Ara, meaning after 12, she got pregnant, and then she had a baby. The Gemara says, but 6 months is not enough time to have a baby. Because we know that the time lap, the interval between Katnus and Bagrus, meaning the period of Narus is only 6 months. And the Gemara over here makes a very brief suggestion. Well, maybe 6 months is just a minimum. The Gemara says, "Ha ella ka'amar." No. If you go back to Shmuel's statement, "Ein be'naros labagros ella." Ella is a limitation. It's only 6 months. Ella hachi kami ba'ilei. So the Gemara says like this. You're right. She's not going to have an estate, meaning she's not going to have children. So we have to go back to the question of Rava. We have to re-ask the question of Rava. And here's how it's going to be re-asked. Yesh beger bekever upaka av, odilma, ein beger bekever velo paka av. So, on one hand, maybe there would be bagrus. If there would be bagrus, so that means the father loses the right to the to claim the kanas. Rashi, upaka av, pakach tvias av, vizaka halabemasha biyado, shein baldino kayam. In other words, Rashi says that if there's bagra, so what does that mean? It means that the father no longer has a claim to the kanas. Because what legitimizes the father's claim to the kanas? The daughter. But not just a daughter who's an ara. That's his rights to the knas. If we say that there was bagrus that occurred, and that her state of naris does not exist in perpetuity, so that means then that he no longer has a claim to the knas, which means that he simply cannot collect it. Odilma, or the other possibility is, ein beger bekever velo paka av. On the other hand, the other possibility is no. That if she died as a nara, her state of naris exists in perpetuity, which now allows the father to collect. To which now the Gemara points out, now we could say it. Meaning after now having just reformulated the question of Rava, but now the Gemara goes back and says, that's the point in which he disagrees with Abaye. Meaning Abaye said, if there's no longer daughter, there's nothing to talk about. Father's not going to collect. To which Rava says, oh, I don't know. Meaning I know we got to a while to get to this point of I don't know, but now we understand the I don't know. Rava says, oh, I don't know. Meaning on one hand, I can hear Abaye's point. On the other hand, maybe if she dies a Nara, that is her state in perpetuity. Meaning, he no longer has a daughter, but she is and will always be a Nara. To which that means then that the father would always be allowed to collect the kanas of her daughter. So,
but also she would be able to, because the money has to go to the father is the state.
Yeah, but in other words, the Baldin is no longer there. If she becomes a Bogeres, right. So now the father, who's the father can't claim on behalf of somebody who's who they themselves can't claim.
That's their estate.
Yeah, but again, we're talking about a kenas. For a kenas, and in order for a kenas to be levied, the baldin, the person who is the responsible party of collecting the kenas has to be there. She's no longer there. And she's a bogeris, meaning had she be there, she'd be advocating, but on her own behalf. But the father can't advocate on her daughter's on his daughter's behalf if his daughter's not there.
Same true for the damages and so on.
The damages is different because they're compensatory. That's a monetary obligation, totally transferable. Kenas is not. Because kenas is a punitive damage, which is only. It only exists when Beis Din says it exists. Meaning it has to first materialize. Now granted, obviously there was a crime that was committed in order to get to the point of kenas, but in terms of an actual payment, it's not viewed as money until Beis Din levies the kenas. And if she's no longer alive, and furthermore, she becomes a bogeres, which means now that if she were alive, she'd be advocating on her behalf. But now she's no longer alive, and she becomes a bogeris. The father no longer has a claim to the kenas. I know it's a takes you know it's a lot to chew on. Okay, Marba Ravashi has a slightly different way of formulating the same basic question. Miso sebagris or eino sebagris? Does death immediately move her to a state of bagris, or no? Does death not move her immediately to a state of bagris? Right. Rashi points out it's not exactly the same as Rava, right? Marba Rashi lo by la by the Rava mishum beggar bekever. It's not exactly the Rava version of the question. The Rava's formulation of the question was, do we see her matriculating even after she dies? Meaning, does she become a bogeris whenever she would have become a bogeris in this world? It's not exactly the same. Ela im mesa ben arusa mipaka ki bagris te mechayim. Meaning, the way that Marba Rav Ashi is asking the question is as follows. Is death the finality of the father's claim? Just like when she becomes a bogeris, that's it, the father no longer has any rights to that kenas, so too, if she dies, same immediate results. Father has no longer any right to the kenas. Olo. Okay, that's so. It's the same idea as Rava, but not exactly the same question as Rava. Yeah.
What about pregnancy also? Like, not that she dies; she doesn't die, but she's pregnant. The pregnancy doesn't change the father's right.
No. If she just
she has a child.
No. Meaning, if she's not, obviously we're talking about when she wasn't married. Right. If she was married, so then again, the marriage, the nisuin is going to remove her from the father.
But if she was violated before because she comes to have it between say at age 11 to 11 and a half, and then she gets pregnant during and has a child during the narrative.
I don't know. I'd be guessing. Okay, by mine rava me abai ba levin isar samahu. So let's say he has relations with her and then erusin. So amalei miksiv nasan lavian ara asher lo arasa. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, to his response to that is the Torah doesn't say, and you give to the father of the nara asher lo arusa. So the Gemara says, but wait a second. But meanwhile, we also know that if a man is manes her and she gets married. So now she gets married, she leaves the domain of her father, she's now an independent. Where does the kenas go? Goes to her. So miksivanasan laviana. So the Gemara says, and what are you gonna say? The pasuk doesn't say that. The Gemara says, Hachi Ashta. So the Gemara says, look, let's not compare those two. So like I said a couple of minutes ago, look, there are two ways that she's going to leave the domain of the father. Either entering into the developmental stage of Bagris, or two, getting married. Meaning both stages of marriage, Eris and Nisuin. Ma Bagris Bala o Bagralatsma, just like when it comes to her getting just like Bagris removes her from her father's domain, which means now that she is the recipient of the Kenas. Av Nisuin, Bala Vinasalatsma. Nisuin, same thing. Because now she leaves the domain of her father, she's going to be recipient of the Kenas. Ela Eris Mika Mafke Mirishusa Da'av Lagamre. But when it comes to Erisin, Erisin does not dismiss her from the domain of the father. How do I know that? Gemara quotes a Mishnah. The Avlagami Hatan. Nara Murasa, Vio Bala Mafirla Nidareha. A Nara Murasa, meaning she's still a Nara, which means that she's under the rights of the father. And even if she went through Erisin, that just simply means now that if she makes a neder, two people collectively have to abrogate her neder, her father and her husband. But the point being that the father does not lose his rights over her just because she underwent erusin. If it's a little bit strange, by the way, that we're talking about nedarim and we're learning nedarim to right now her collectible ability of money. And what are we doing basically? We're comparing Isser to Mammon. Tosus is bothered by that. Tosus wonders how can we go from money to Isser? Tosus hovel and Isser matzim rishus af. Tosus says perish bekushus yafina me'afras nedarim ve'alfagav dekaimel and mamonim isser lo yafina hanimila lo'uk me'brishus av hu de lo yafina mamonim isira avala fukim rishus av yafina shapir me'afras nedarim de besvarim huetus yesh lo sir rishus av. So Tosus points out that look, we're not learning money from Isser or Isser from money. All we're saying is you see that she doesn't leave the domain of the father, meaning she's still within the domain of the father even after erusin. If that's true regarding neder, so it's also going to be true regarding money as well.
So it's not complete though, because for neder, both the husband, right? And if she's in a stage of erusin,
if she's a nara and erusin, she needs both.
So why but, money wouldn't go to the husband and the father?
Right. No, it's just
less money.
Right. But in other words, her husband, because her husband is made for neder. Again, to go back to Tosus's point. Tosus's point is that what you see from here is she's not leaving the domain of the father. Father still has rights. So in terms of nedarim, so the husband now is introduced, he's a husband. So he has the right to be made for neder as well. But the point being is that she doesn't leave the father. She's still within the domain of the father. So the Gemara assumes that with money, same idea.
Why are we ignoring the second part, that the husband also has the right in terms of neder?
I do hear your question, but the Gemara.
Similar.
Yeah, I hear what you're asking, but the Gemara just assumes this to be an indication that father is still nothing changed with the father in terms of his rights. Okay. Mishnah.
Okay. Is it possible that this is because the husband has to pay the father to give him money, anyways?
Maybe. Maybe. Okay. There are two parshiyos in the Torah. We've gone over this a number of times, but here's the Mishnah that really speaks out the difference between pitui and onus. I told you, mishpatim kiseitse. Parshiyos mishpatim, that's pitui. That's deduction. The Torah says, v'chi yifate ish besula shelo rasa. The man seduces a woman who is a besula and not betrothed. V'shachav ima, and she, now remember, this is seduction. So that means that he initiated, but she capitulated. So he basically makes a marriage contract, takes her as a wife. But if the father says, I'm not interested, no. So then he pays. Now, Torah over here doesn't say what he pays. Remember, that's why we had a Gzeirah Shavah. Without the Gzeirah Shavah, I wouldn't know what we're talking about. But there was a Gzeirah Shavah that we went over just yesterday, which means that this Parsha is linked with this Parsha. Parsha's Kiseitse, Perichav Beis. By the way, the Prakim, we didn't do the Prakim. So, but it's, you know, it's just it's a great way to find the find a Pasuk in the Torah. So, but if you need like a good mnemonic, it's Perichav Beis, Perichav Beis. Perichav Beis in Shmos, Perichav Beis in Kiseitse. So the Torah says, Kiimsa Ishna Ravisula Shalor Asa. So here we start with the same Nara Basula. She wasn't betrothed. Usif Asa. And he grabs her, meaning he has his will with her, he violates her. Vishachavi Mavinimsu. Vinasana Isha Shokhivi Malaviana Rachamishim Kasef. So then he pays 50 Kasef. Velosi Elisha, and they are married. Tachas Asher Ina, in lieu of the fact that he violated her. Loichal Shachal Koyamav. And he cannot divorce her. So it's similar, but what the Mishnah now is about to point out that pitui and ones are not the same in terms of the ramifications of seduction versus violation. So let's see the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to highlight the basic differences between the two. Starts the Mishnah. Mefata nosin shlosha dvarim. A mefata has three compensatory payments. Va'onis arba. While meanwhile, an onis has four. A mefata nosin boshes begamu kenas. The mefata, the man who seduces a woman, pays her for the embarrassment, for the pegam, that's the actual depreciated value of having removed her besulim, and uknas, and he also has to pay knas. Mosif alav ones shenosin as a tsar. As far as an onus is concerned, there's another compensatory payment that you have to pay in that tsar, and that's the pain. The Gemara, and where the Gemara is going to explain why by the mefata there's no tsar. The Gemara is going to address that issue. Might be known as the mefata. So now the Mishnah says, what's the difference between the two? Even though in the beginning of the Mishnah already pointed out a major difference between the two. But what other differences are there between the two? Ha'onis nosin esesar, mefata nosin esesar. So kind of like a recap. So if you haven't figured it out now, so by onis there's tsar. There's a payment of tsar. By pitui there's no payment of tsar. Ha'onis nosin miyad. Now as far as the onis is concerned, what does he pay? Right away. Meaning, as we'll see later on, or as we'll see right now, irrespective of whether he marries her or he does not marry her, he pays the knas right away. However, when the man seduces a woman, so he also has a knas that he needs to pay. But payment doesn't come immediately. It's on the back end. If the marriage terminates, or if there is no marriage, either way, then and only then does he pay the knas. Ha'onis shote batzitzo. As far as an onus is concerned, the Gemara here speaks in a metaphor, but basically, the onus does not have an option. He marries her. Now, as we'll see, it'll become clear, she has an option, her father has an option, but he, the ma'anes, he has no option. He has to marry her. As far as deduction is concerned, he's not locked in. Ketzad, shotze batzitzo. The Mishnah over here spells it out. Afilu hichigeris. Let's say she's lame. Afilu hisuma. She's blind. Afilu mukashchin. Let's say she even has boils. It doesn't matter. Meaning he's ma'anes her. He is obligated to marry her. Required to marry her. Does not have a choice in the matter. Nimsa badaver ervah she'en ruya lavav b'Yisrael. Ein v'shal lekayma. However, if there's a dvar ervah, something which is prohibitive about her, or Eino Rai Lavav Yisrael, sounds similar to one another. We will discuss that later on. Eino Rishala Kaima, so then he can't marry her. Shenemer Velosi Alisha Isha Ruyalo. It has to be a woman that's fitting to him, meaning halachically fitting to him. So in other words, if it's a physical deformity, he has to marry her. If it's a halachic impasse, so then he can't marry her. We'll talk more about that later on as well. So it's hard to mind. So the Gemara says, when we say pain, what are we talking about? Meaning, what's the pain that we're talking about? Question: the Gemara is a little bit strange. You see the bottom Tosfos, Kashulari Demai Kami Bayle Vechilo Yada Ashas Sheish Star Gadol LeBesul BeBiyah Rishona VeKama Ketanos Cholos Mizeh. So the question of the Gemara is a little bit strange. Meaning, there's pain. There's always pain involved for the woman the first time. But Tosfos points out that's true. But Vechitem Demaos Tzar Pshita LeLashas DePato Sharei Sofalit Star BeKachdach Hazbala Vayika Kama Tanai BeAkones VeDelochaish LeKichesh Gufna Perestav VeShesofliOs Kain VeNir LeRi. Sorry, I know I sped red, but I just wanted to get to Tosfos's point. The three lines from the bottom in Tosfos: VeNir LeRi DeTzar BeIla Mishum Taivas Tashmish Eino Ba BeShas Tashmish El Acharkach VeChol Tzar Chaval LeMechayv Haynu Oso Tzar Habalo BeShas. Very interesting principle that the Tosfos lays down in terms of the assessment of pain. When we're assessing pain as a compensatory damage, that's only talking about pain at the time of the damage, meaning a future pain that's going to result from that. So soreness that comes at a later point in time, that is not assessed as part of the tsar payment in the five compensatory damages. Very interesting principle. So what Tosfos says is that what the Gemara wants to know is, we obviously every woman who undergoes relations for the first time is going to be experiencing some sort of soreness. But Tosfos says, but that's afterwards, and that's not included in tsar payment. Tsar payment is only for tsar payment that occurs at the time. So now that we understand that, now it's going to give us a much better insight in terms of the Gemara coming up. What the Gemara is now looking for is what pain is being suffered at the time of the act of relations. So the Gemara says, So good. So let's go back to the Gemara. Sar Demai. Amar Avu Deshmol Tzar Shechavta Agabe Karvka. So the Gemara says he threw it out to the ground. So that was the pain that we're talking about. So Maskev Lo Rebbe Zera Lamiata Chavta Agabe Shirai Machanam Depater. So let's say he throws on her bed. Okay, so in other words, he cushions the blow. So you're going to tell me then that there's no tsar? And I guess including this question is, if there's such a basic difference, why doesn't the Mishnah tell us about such a basic difference? So that can't be what the tsar is talking about. Now there is an opinion of Rabbi Shimon, which obviously our Mishnah does not subscribe to. And that is that there is no tsar payment for an ones. Meaning, not to say no payment, obviously, meaning there's all the other payments, but not tsar. Why not? Because ultimately, she's going to be experiencing this pain with her husband. So, amrulo, eino doma nevelas ba'onis levelas baratzon. To which the Chachamim said back to Rabbi Shimon, can't compare. Can't compare a woman who's violated and a woman who is an interested partner in the act of relations. So, but what does that tell us, though? In other words, we're not talking about the pain of being thrown down on the floor. We're talking about some other pain. So, Alam Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Abaravu, Tzar Shel Pitzuk HaRegliim. So the Gemara says, okay, it's the pain of spreading her legs. V'cheinu Omer v'tif sheki es raglayach l'chol over. Pasuk Nicheskel graphically is giving tochacha to the Jewish people, meaning that the Jewish people are over to Avodah Zarah, and even though it's painful, they're going to do it anyway. So ihachi mefuta nami. So the Gemara says, okay, but what do we say regarding pitui? Meaning by seduction. The Mishnah says that by ones there is a tsar, and by pitui there is not tsar. But if we're talking about pisuk raglayim, so that's true by pitui as well. I'm Rav Nachman, I'm a Rav Abaravu, I'm Ashal de mefuta ma da vedomer. So the Gemara is going to give us a couple of analogies. La'adam sham lechaveru karashirayim shalivi vihipater. The first analogy is, she's mochel. Meaning, right now what the Gemara is arguing is, you're right, there's pain by ones and there's pain by pitui. But because she ultimately capitulates, so her capitulation is also mechila. She's waiving the pain. Or I should say, let me say a little bit better. She's waiving the pain payment. That's right now with how the Gemara is explaining it. So the Gemara says, shali davuninu. So the Gemara says, wait a second, it's not hers. Meaning, she can't be mochel something that is not ultimately going to go to her. It's going to go to the father. So, it can't be. In other words, it can't be that it's rooted in her mechila. So, Ella, I'm Rav Nachman, I'm a Rav Abaravua, Pikachu Shabam Omros, Mefuta Ein Latzar. So, the Gemara says, the Pikachos, if you will, the nurse practitioners, in other words, women who know. Women who know say that there's no pain. So Amar Abaye, Amar Le'aim, sorry, I skipped a line. V'aka chazina de'eslei. So the Gemara says, what do you mean there isn't? There is. So Amar Abaye, Amar Le'aim. So Abaye quotes his mother, his foster mother. He does that pretty frequently. Kemaya chamima resha dekarcha. Gemara here gives a couple of analogies. Basically, what the Gemara is saying through all these analogies is, yes, a little bit of pain. It does not meet a threshold in which there's going to be a tsar payment. So the Gemara, one analogy of the Gemara is, it's like pouring hot water on top of a bald head. The Gemara, a couple places the Gemara has this kind of, right, these kinds of analogies. But basically, okay, I'm not saying I fully understand it. I understand the sentiment the Gemara is trying to convey. It's a little bit of pain, but it doesn't meet a threshold. Rava Amar Amarli Bas Rav Chista. Rava says, it was told to me by the daughter of Chista, who parenthetically was his wife, but, you know, speaking in a very modest way, kirivda de kusilta, it's like bloodletting. Okay, you go to the bloodletter, okay, it's going to, right, a little pinch. So, Rav Papa Amar Amili Bas Abba Surah, kinahama akushi bechencha. When you're chewing on some really hard wheat, so, you know, you get like a, right, it's a little bit abrasive, but okay, in other words, once again, nothing. All these analogies are basically telling us is there's a little bit of pain, but not enough to get to a point of tsar payment. Ha'onis notes that miyad me'afat le'chishiyotzi. So the Gemara says, as far as the onus is concerned, he makes the payment right away, and as far as pitu is concerned, when he lets her go. Le'chishiyotzi ishtohi. So the Gemara says, what are we talking about? So Amar Abaye ema lechishelo yechnos. Abaye says no. What the Mishnah means is if He right now, we're talking about the mefata. The ma'anis pays right away. The mefata, you have an option. Seduce her, you need to marry her. But here he has an option. If he doesn't want to marry her, then he has to pay the kenas. If he marries her, so what happens? The kenas rolls over into a ksuva. Tanya nami achi then we're quotes a brisa. Alpha bishamra mefata nosen lecheshelo yechnos boshes to pekam nosen miyad. The mefata pays, but only if they don't get married. Boshes and pegam is paid right away. Now, when it comes to onus, when it comes to pitui, her and her father can object to the marriage. Okay, bishlama mefutaksiv. Should we stop here? Yeah, let's stop over here. Okay, we'll pick it up tomorrow with talking about the refusal of the marriage. Who has the rights of refusal of the marriage for both onus and pitui? So again, let's just quick summary statement, and we conclude. So again, we talk about a redirection of kenas if she undergoes erusin. A woman undergoes erusin and then gets a divorce, and then Rachman Litzlan, she's an anusa. So what happens in terms of her kenas? So two versions of Rabbi Akiva, either it goes to her or it goes to the father. The Rambam sides with the Mishnah's version. It goes to her. She becomes now the recipient of the kenas. The very conceptual question of the Gemara is that if, let's say, she was a Nara and she was violated and she dies, does she matriculate even after she dies? Or another way the Gemara asks the question is, does death terminate the father's relationship with her to the point where he no longer has a right to claim the kenas? So Rava asked the question, Mar Bar Ravashi asked the question, Abaye says it very simply. Once she's no longer alive, that's it. The father no longer collects kenas. He has a drasha. The Gemara says the Rambam sides with Abaye's version of that as well. And finally, the last thing we did today was a Mishnah and its delineation between the differences of pitui versus onus. And we continue with that discussion tomorrow.